Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Next time you're sitting having lunch or have booked accommodation at the Beverly Hills, the Sun Square, perhaps a conference at the Sandton Convention Center, or even the Palazzo in Four Ways, do remember that you are using an entity that falls under the Southern Sun Group. A few years ago, previously referred to as Tsoho Sun, but now known as Southern Sun, which published its results today, showing that there's been significant growth, especially within the Western Cape and Cape Town arena, largely on the back of stronger growth from business tourism. Revenue up 19%, declaring a dividend this time around, and also participating in a share buyback, which is quite telling in terms of the growth of the business. Someone who knows all about it and has been at the helm of the institution for some time now is Marcel von Olock, Southern Sun CEO. Marcel, such a pleasure to have you with us, and thank you for your patience with us this evening, sir. I know it's been an incredibly busy day, lots of conversation and ongoing interviews to do, so we're excited to have you.
Thank you very much.
Fantastic. I guess first things first, Marcel, there's a wonderful turnaround in terms of growth and activity that we've witnessed from the company, especially post-pandemic. And maybe let's help tie in the pickup we've seen in business tourism in the Western Cape and how that might speak to future growth prospects too.
So this was a good year because it was a nice clean year post the absolute trauma that COVID wreaked on the hospitality industry. So it's the first clean set of numbers we've had where we haven't had any disruption, lingering disruption from COVID. And what came out of that was that we obviously did a lot of restructuring of the business during that period. I mean, we had to close all our hotels. We had 3 years of losing money, and we've at least managed to hold onto the cost initiatives that we put in place there. So you've got a fundamentally much healthier balance sheet and business that we've come out with. And then you've got a tailwind of particularly the Western Cape tourism that's kicked in nicely. The market has changed from pre to post COVID. Mm-hmm. We're seeing far more demand for upscale accommodation. Price is not the determinant of travel. The rich got richer and the poor got poorer. And that is a sad tragedy of COVID. But the rich are spending, and that higher end travel is going. And in the business world, your individual transient traveler, as we call it. So person X arriving at the hotel, they're on business, not associated with a group or a function or a particular conference or anything, just going about their business, is still pretty weak, which talks to the SA economy. But your big event stuff, your large-scale conferences, your things that fill up the convention center in Cape Town and in Sandton, those are very strong. The demand for that has come back incredibly strongly, more so than was pre-COVID. So it's our overall numbers, our volume numbers are kind of at pre-COVID levels, but the business is a different business. And the places we're making our money are different places.
I find this intriguing, but I've also experienced this by traveling quite a bit for business and actually witnessing the demand for your hotels and your facilities, especially during the conferencing season in South Africa. February specifically stands out in Cape Town. Mm-hmm. I'm keen to understand if this does mean that you've had to shift some dynamics in your model, managing your margins going forward, and perhaps if this does play a role as well in terms of meeting customer needs at the end of the day.
So the big difference between high demand and low demand is what we can charge. Okay. We did roughly the same sort of occupancy in Durban as we did in Cape Town. Cape Town was a little bit higher, but not materially so. The difference was the rate that we achieved. Mm. And if a hotelier talks to you and only talks about occupancy, they're definitely only giving you half the story. Mm. The difference is what price can you fill it at? I can fill any hotel to 100% by charging nothing, and then I make no money. So you've got to get that balance in pricing. As that demand comes, particularly with international demand coming in, you get the ability to price up. And it's how often you fall. So when a hotel is at 60% occupancy, it's seldom actually at 60. It's running full 3 days a week, and then it's running at 30% another 3 days, and depends what happens on a Sunday night. Your average might come out at 60, but those days that you fall are when you can charge the premium pricing. And when you're running at 30%, you're largely a price taker, whatever the market will offer. And the more often you fill up, the more often you get your higher pricing. So we've seen quite a big gap open up between what we're achieving in Cape Town versus what we're then achieving in Durban and then in Joburg. And the order is like that. So Cape Town's the strongest, then Durban, and then Joburg. Joburg's actually still quite weak because outside of the big convention stuff, there's not a lot of business travel that's come back to normal.
Sure.
Also not helped by quite a lot of new stock came into Joburg prior to COVID-19, which hasn't been fully absorbed yet.
That's quite intriguing. I'm keen to understand if the visa policies and regulations come into play here. And I want to link this conversation into the elections happening next week. I'm not asking about the politics, but rather the policies that impact the business space that you're in. Are they effective conversations? Because I'm aware that this has been taking place for quite some time now, Marcel.
It's an ongoing saga, and there seems to be a resistance, I think, and this is my own opinion, and I can't back it up I get a distinct impression there's a resistance within the Department of Home Affairs, not at the ministerial type level, at the administrator, civil servant level, where sort of Home Affairs sees their role to enforce regulations and to block people getting into the country. And you take a saga around like this, the Swallows issue. Now, these are people that they come in on a 90-day visa and you can get it extended to 180 days. They get away from the European winter, they spend summer here, and they do nothing but actually spend money in the country. They are just the most perfect visitors that you could hope for. They come in with their euros, they blow a fortune, and then they go back. To have a debacle like we did, whether it was intended or policy or not, like you cannot start creating uncertainty around are they going to be able to stay for 180 days or not. And when the official behind the desk starts saying, you are now banned because you have not... because you've overstayed your 90 days, and now you're standing there as a German pensioner saying, but I was told I could do this. It is just not on, and it doesn't help how much government announcement is later. What happens to the German pensioner at the counter who's being intimidated? Next year they will spend their euros somewhere else. And that sort of thing happening must not happen. We remember the unabridged birth certificate debacle that was back in Melusi Gigalva's days. Now, I mean, it's long gone, but there are still airlines. When you're trying to book a ticket and you click your destination as South Africa, up pops a whole warning saying, be careful that your documentation is done and will involve, because they've put it on and the airlines are never going to take it off because they say we were burnt once. We don't take any risk. That's how lingering these bad decisions are. That unabridged birth certificate nonsense is largely gone, but when you're sitting somewhere in America or UK or something, and you're picking your next holiday, and Bali doesn't have a warning come up when you click the destination, but Cape Town does, someone's going to swing a decision. It's that sort of thing. So we don't need to be doing a lot. We need to just not do silly things.
100%. I'm so intrigued because, as you say, these do really have lingering effects and a vast impact on the tourism industry. I guess coming back to the positioning of your balance sheet, net debt has reduced by at least $1 billion. As you've mentioned, important cost management tools that you've implemented. But I'm keen to understand more about the share buyback and, of course, the rationale behind this decision.
So we obviously felt the company was vastly undervalued. There's two ways you can give money back to shareholders. You pay a dividend or you buy back shares on the market. Yes. And those who stay benefit from that. Now, buybacks are only good if you're buying them at good prices. Buyback for the sake of it doesn't work. And what we are trading at is, in very simplistic terms, if you take our value on the stock exchange, divide by the number of rooms that we outright own, you're coming out at a number of about 800,000 rand a key. I can't build a one-star hotel for 800,000 a key. Mm-hmm. If I want to build a normal Southern Sun product, I'm looking at 2.5 to 3 million a key. Mm-hmm. Now that tells you it makes a lot more sense for me to go and buy Southern Sun shares rather than go and buy somebody else's shares or try and build new product. The only way we're going to build new product is in particular areas where I need an addition to the portfolio, for example, in Schlange, where I don't have enough hotels. But that basic decision of what do I do with R1 billion a year of cash that we generate is, if our shares are trading at such a discount and they're available, we took them. And that's how that decision came along. And it's a very risk-free thing for a company. I don't have to do due diligence because I know the company. I don't have regulatory approvals. I don't have lawyers involved. I don't have bankers and advisors. You literally do it over lunch because your broker says the shares are thinking, we buy them. Mm-hmm. I don't think there'd be another opportunity to buy such a large amount back. I think there were some institutions that made a lot of money on buying us on the cheap during COVID. They took a bet we weren't going bust, and they made a good profit, and they cashed out. So it was a unique chance to I think, allocate capital heavily. If we hadn't done that, we would have almost no debt left. And our balance sheet is in very good condition. We've got 1 billion of debt, 2 billion of EBITDA, so that's about 0.7, I think, is the actual answer there. Very different place to where we were 4 years ago. So, we quite comfortable, and then we see how this grows going forward. And for that, we need the SA economy to perform.
Definitely. And that's a valid point for us to wrap it up on what the future growth prospects do look like for Southern Sun. Are we looking at acquisitions, just bedding down where we are and improving growth? And how much of it does have a very strong reliance on the macroeconomic concerns, inflation, interest rates, and other cost pressures?
I think we're going to do okay. The Cape Town boom is in the base, but I think it will continue. If nobody does anything silly, the demand for Cape Town is strong. So we think that will continue. We'll have another good year. We think the corporate market is going to improve. We're seeing a continuous sort of steady uptick of demand. Our strategy is very inward focused. Sounds terrible, but it has some logic behind it. Mm-hmm. We have an irreplaceable portfolio. We own 70 of the 95 hotels we run. I'm very happy putting money into our product and making sure it's best in class wherever we are, because I cannot replace that product other than at exceptionally higher cost. So maintenance capex on our own product and making sure that we can really deliver to the customer properly, saying at some point the SA economy is going to come right. We're going to see a financial boom along with just the tourism boom. Let's make sure we're well-placed for that. You cannot replace the portfolio we have, look after it, rather than going running around trying to do acquisitions and buy other people. And if the market doesn't value our stock, we'll buy it back until the market does value it.
Makes sense. No need to be buying your way in and out of trouble or doing silly things, as you say. Marcel, such a pleasure to speak to you, sir. I appreciate the lessons and the learnings you've shared with many journalists like myself since my days back at CNBC Africa. So very refreshing. Excellent. To see the evolution of the business and ourselves within understanding the industry. Thank you again for your time this evening, sir.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's Marcel von Olock, who's the CEO of Southern Sun. Yeah, really giving us a refreshing perspective in understanding the dynamics that are happening within the hospitality space, specifically when it comes to hoteliers. And such amazing insight he gave us there, right? Anyone can fill a hotel when it comes to occupancy, but at what price? That is important, because fundamentally there are fixed costs that you need to account for, and the margins and the pricing that you implement does play a significant role. So really does put things into a different perspective. And I guess if you're much like me and happen to travel to Cape Town often, February is one of those busy months. It's the mining in Durban, the budget speech, the State of the Nation, coupled with many other side events that take place. That's usually when the likes of the Westin and the Southern Sun Hotel at the Cullinan become very, very busy with heightened levels of traffic, even on the road. So, yeah, for those of you who are business travelers, the numbers are making sense now, right? All of the traveling we've been doing is having an impact on the economy, and thankfully, a favorable one also on Southern Sun's results.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.